Welcome to the Coroner's Report. Before we begin, please remember this is a true crime podcast with adult themes including murder, LGBT topics, drug abuse issues, sexual abuse, etc. Please be aware, when possible, the actual person's voice is in this podcast. However, several witnesses are deceased. Some chose not to be recorded. Still others agreed for their words to be used, but not their real names. In those situations, voice actors were utilized to read the actual words from the police statements or from our interviews. This case has been heavily researched, and the case file is available in its entirety in our archives and on our website at coronersreport.net. Please remember to like and follow us on all social media platforms.
We responded to a fire call up by Lake Hamilton. It was late in the day, I think, between 3, 4 in the afternoon. It was a crisp, sunny day, you know, and as we got in the vicinity of the fire, we can see that it was a working structure fire, meaning that we could see heavy black smoke from, you know, several blocks away. When we pulled up to the front, we staged our ambulance away from the fire apparatus that was already on scene, and we got our first out bags and we went to the front lawn. And the fire department was there, and the fire was venting itself, meaning it was blowing out the front windows, and the fire department was on the front lawn, lobbing water into the structure. Well, the front door had already been breached, and it was pushed open, and there was heavy smoke and flame coming out the windows in the front. And as I approached the front door, the smoke was banked down from the ceiling to about 1 foot from the floor, and I had a clear view down this corridor, and I was able to see what appeared to me legs of a person sticking out of a room. And I said to the fireman, I said, you know, I think there's a body in there. And they said, well, it's too hot. And I just did what I was taught to do. I crawled down the hall, located the body, grabbed her by her ankles, and I dragged her to the front door, met my partner. We put her on this folding stretcher, got her out to the front lawn, and she was obviously deceased, blistered, not breathing. Her body was in extremely bad condition from being scalded, I believe.
Welcome to the Coroner's Report. I'm Steve Novoychek, and along with my partners Carla Bozeman and Tracy Carrington, we review some of the cases I worked as coroner of two of the largest counties in Arkansas. I also served as director of the State Crime Lab, but these days I'm retired and looking back on those most memorable cases. I remember this fire back in 1978. I also remember getting chewed out by the mayor because EMT Jim Holly rushed into a burning building. Holly was 22 years old and ate some smoke that day. It was his first grab. I don't think either of us expected 46 years later to be talking about this day. I was just a baby coroner and running an ambulance service back then. 20-something years old. We were all so young, not much older than the kids in this story. Sometimes you have to reach far back into the past to tell a good story, and this story, well, it's a good one. It sticks with you. The deceased, Evelyn Williams, was 77 years old and one of 26 heirs to the Maybelline fortune.
So how did she end up dead at her lake house in Hot Springs, Arkansas? She was a long way from her hometown of Chicago, but Evelyn did a lot of living in those 77 years, and we're going to try to tell you this crazy story. Well, sometimes it's just best to let the family do the talking.
Sherry Williams is Evelyn's granddaughter, and like any granddaughter, she loved her Nana.
Nana had that German will that you wouldn't believe. So she actually got to go to the Institute of Chicago, where she learned to do ballet. And by the time she was 16, she was signed to be in the Ballet Russe, the Russian ballet, and she was able to tour. She wasn't satisfied at home, so she ran away with the circus. And she became the ballet dancer that would maybe ride on top of the elephant. And here it was, the Memorial Day Parade, 1922. And all of a sudden, this really handsome Valentino-looking man starts walking down the street ahead of her. And he did a double take on her, and she did double take on him. And all of a sudden, he turned around and went back to her and said, "By chance, are you wearing Maybelline?" And she said, "I certainly am."
And those sparks lit a fire. By the time Evelyn and Preston had met, Preston's brother, Tom Lyle Williams, had hit the big time with his little company called Maybelline. The company had been founded on a bit of a fluke in Morganfield, Kentucky, when Preston's brother started marketing eye makeup named after their sister, Mabel. Mabel had singed her eyebrows and eyelashes in a minor kitchen fire while cooking and had concocted a mixture of coal dust or burned cork and Vaseline to refresh her eyebrows and eyelashes.
This story just keeps coming back to fire.
Well, Steve, fire and a little bit of Bonnie and Clyde, or maybe even the Great Gatsby. It was the 20s after all, and let's remember, the Roaring 20s? Well, they put the summer of love in the 60s to shame. While we like to remember our grandmothers as puritanical saints, in the 20s, that was a whole other story. Evelyn was a flapper, and in 1923, the pair appeared in the newspapers in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Preston Williams, 24, and Evelyn Boucher, 22, were brought to the station Sunday evening for investigation in connection with forgery charges. Preston Williams and Evelyn Boucher were ready to leave town when apprehended. Mr. Williams had rented a car with which he admitted to the police he intended to make a round of the oil stations and cash a few more checks for pocket money. Mr. Preston Williams was dressed in cake-eater garb, and Miss Evelyn was also well-dressed.
Cake-eater. They're folks that... A lot of times they're not quite as rich as they want people to think they are, and they really do embellish what's going on, but they're just people like the rest of us when you get right down to it.
People with problems. And the only problem with this is that Evelyn was pregnant, and Preston had a wife in Quincy, Illinois, waiting on her husband to return.
Preston was held on a $1,000 bond, which would be like a $20,000 bond today. But the Williams family and Maybelline came to their rescue.
Preston Williams, a Chicago youth, has pleaded guilty and was paroled to his father. A statement by a physician on file in the court records indicated that Williams is suffering from a mental derangement.
There was nothing in the paper about how Evelyn's case turned out, but as far as we know, this was their only brush with the law. I imagine Preston's wife wasn't too thrilled with his new girlfriend, Evelyn, and their soon-to-be-born son.
Yeah, who would be? That November, Preston and Evelyn welcomed into the world their bouncing baby boy, William Preston Williams Jr. He would be known as Bill for the rest of his life.
There was still a little housekeeping to do. Preston luckily was granted a divorce from his first wife, clearing his way to marry Evelyn and settle down with his little family, a typical young couple.
But nothing is ever typical in this story.
Quickly, however, everything started falling apart. Another woman caught Preston's eye, and soon another son was born out of wedlock. Evelyn and Preston divorced. Preston was diagnosed with colon cancer, and Evelyn tried to nurse him back to health, but Preston died. By 1936, Evelyn was a single mother living in Chicago, and it's about this time her brother-in-law and the founder of Maybelline set his sights on Hollywood, and Evelyn followed.
Evelyn worked hard promoting Maybelline, and she was rewarded for her efforts. She raised her son and married again, only to become a widow after 5 short years.
Evelyn really did have trouble keeping her husbands alive through no fault of her own. By the 1960s, she's living a quiet life in California, but that was about to change. In 1968, her former brother-in-law sold Maybelline for $132 million, or $1.2 billion in today's dollars, and he gifted 26 members of his family with their own separate fortunes. That included both Evelyn and her son, Bill.
So she went from upper middle class to a multimillionaire overnight. As the 60s came to a close and the 70s rushed in, Evelyn was eyeballing turning 70 years old. And like most women, she didn't care too much for what time was doing to her body.
That's when she started visiting the Londoner Wig Boutique in Newport Beach, California, where she meets Danny King.
You know, Steve, it's funny how one small thing can change your entire life. One misstep can change not only your own life, but your family's life forever. Sherry Williams, Evelyn's granddaughter, she remembers this time vividly in her grandmother's life. It was right before everything went so very, very wrong.
She wore beautiful Ava Gabor wigs, but she didn't really want to have to style them. So this guy, Danny, styled wigs, and they just took to each other immediately because he was a showman, and so was she. I liked him too. I mean, he was really fun. You know, he would have the disco music or whatever blasting, and you could picture it. It was really kind of Hollywood. Newport Beach at that time in Lido Isle was very conservative, and here Danny is, and it was a fun place to go. And that's kind of how he edged into our family.
Danny King. Well, what can you say about old Danny King? He was born in Los Angeles and raised in Kent, Washington. His given name was Harry Daniel Alkire, which was not the easiest name to market. But he had a secret. He was gay, and being gay in the 50s, well, that wasn't celebrated.
But that didn't stop Danny from living his life. In the mid-60s, he's in his early 20s and making headlines in San Angelo, Texas.
Opening the Londoner wig boutique in larger quarters has been announced by Ralph John Delaney, associated with Danny King and the firm. King is away during the holidays visiting Vancouver, British Columbia, and Seattle. His Canadian family has been in the wig-making business for more than a century.
Don't be shocked. Danny had no family in Canada, nor did his family make wigs. It appears the Londoner wig boutique was struggling, as Delaney was charged a couple of times with passing bad checks.
So sometime between 1970 and 1972, Danny and Delaney relocated to Newport Beach, California, where they opened the Londoner Wig Boutique of Newport Beach.
That's when Miss Maybelline meets Danny, the Pied Piper, and later a clown named Hobby.
So by this time, Evelyn is 71. She's got more life behind her than in front of her. And maybe she's looking for excitement. Her grandchildren were almost grown, and she was simply looking for friends, someone to socialize with, someone closer to her age and her lifestyle.
Enter Delisle Compton. Delisle was a bit younger than Evelyn, and she had lived a glamorous life. Delisle went to school in Hollywood and graduated from Fairfax High, where she was classmates with a young Ricardo Montalban and Mickey Rooney. So it wasn't surprising she chose to become an actress or model. But not everything turns out the way you expect it to when you're 17 years old with stars in your eyes.
Ain't that the truth?
Delisle appeared in a few films, typically as a background character, and she modeled. She even pops up a few times in the gossip rags of Hollywood, but never anything scandalous. By the 1950s, Delisle was living in Las Vegas and was writing a society column for the newspaper and married to a doctor.
The Comptons were raising their son and living the high society in Vegas. Dr. Compton was the head of the Las Vegas Medical Association, and Delisle was hosting fundraisers for various charities. They really were high Las Vegas society. Everything seems to be on the up and up, right?
Of course. Until it isn't. Life has a way of throwing you those curveballs when you least expect it.
By 1965, Delisle was divorcing her husband and living in Newport Beach closer to her mother, who by all accounts was a tad bit eccentric and maybe even unstable.
Delisle was a single mother in the 60s and early 70s, just like Evelyn was in the 30s and 40s. That's not the only thing the women had in common. They were at one time the best of friends until they weren't. While the relationship ended badly and set Miss Maybelline on a path leading to her death, their relationship wasn't always that bitter.
So three of the four characters in our crazy story are now living near Newport Beach, and that's when the real story was about to begin. You know, every story needs a clown. Enter a fellow named Hobby Derrick.
My given name is Charles Hobson Derrick. I was born in Texas in 1909, but my folks moved us all up to Arkansas, where I was brought up. I had dreams. I wasn't going to be no dirt farmer in Arkansas all my life. Hell, I didn't have much of an education. I only made it to the fourth grade. That didn't stop me. I was a damn good painting body man. They called me Chick Derrick in Arkansas, but out west, they started calling me Hobby Derrick. I've been married 6 times, legal, but one of my marriages was for the sole purpose of saving someone. I had a hell of a life.
We hear through the grapevine that Nana has met somebody. What? As it turns out, Danny King's partner, Delisle Compton, supposedly had a father that was a retired colonel or something. And Nana liked him because he was a Southern gentleman. He treated her regally. And then she gave him $5,000 cash just to take her out.
Chick Derrick, aka Hobby Derrick, kicks around life as an auto body guy. He's just a blue-collar sort of fella, hard-working until
he started his life of crime and wooing the ladies.
I keep wondering if they called him Chick because he was a chick magnet. Well, they certainly didn't call him Chick for nothing.
In 1934, Derrick is convicted of kidnapping and robbing a store owner and sentenced to 3 years in prison.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking prison wasn't a fun place to be in Arkansas during that time period.
Well, it was during the Depression and the time of the Tucker telephone, but at least he got fed.
I gotta ask, what's the Tucker telephone?
You don't know about the Tucker telephone?
No, how would I know about the Tucker telephone?
The Tucker telephone. Well, it's one of those old-timey crank phones, you know. And what they would do is they would take the phone and connect the wires from it to the individual's testicles and crank like crazy to get them to say or do whatever they wanted them to. It was a fun thing. It was a fun time.
Oh, Jesus, Steve. That just sounds delightful.
Derek gets out of prison a little early and marries his 16-year-old sweetheart. In less than a year, she filed for divorce.
Derek was around her, and it wasn't too long before he was in trouble with the law again. In 1942, he's not overseas fighting for his country. Nope. Hobby was arrested in two different states.
Hobby Derek was arrested after an altercation Friday night at a North Little Rock, Arkansas restaurant.
3 months later in Kennett, Missouri, Derek is arrested again.
Hobby Derek of Kennett, Missouri was arrested and charged with assault with intent to kill, but those charges were reduced to assault. Derek was sentenced to 3 months in jail and fined $50.
Sounds like he might have a little bit of an anger issue.
He bounced back and forth between Arkansas and Missouri for a few years and owns Chick's Paint and Body Works in Missouri.
Now you've got to realize, Chick isn't franchising his dealerships. He's just moving around that much, chase and tail. In 1951, he opens a Chick's Paint and Body Works in Memphis, Tennessee, right before that boy from Tupelo with those wiggly hips hits it big.
But Derek most likely didn't get into the Memphis music scene, nor the barbecue there. No, he was too busy in court.
Suspicion of lifting 900 pounds of lead and several storage batteries from Standard Parts landed four men in Memphis City Court today to face larceny or receiving stolen property charges. Hobby Derek, 41, pleaded not guilty to the charge of receiving stolen property. Derek, the operator of Chick's Paint and Body Works, revealed 600 pounds of lead on his premises after being arrested yesterday.
I can't understand why anyone would choose to steal 900 pounds of anything, much less lead. Derek was convicted and sentenced to 11 months of work on the Shelby County Penal Farm.
Oh, that sounds dirty. And it doesn't sound like a nice place to be serving time.
Derek gets out of the pen and, of course, he marries again.
And again.
Derek spends the rest of the 50s roaming back and forth between Arkansas and Nevada. He opens yet another Chick's Body Shop in Las Vegas, and that may have been where he met and married Delisle's mother, Cecile.
Cecile married about as many times as Hobby did, but her marriages were a bit more successful financially for the most part. She had lived a life Hobby could only dream of. Why, only a month before the marriage, she and Delisle had attended President John F. Kennedy's inauguration in Washington, D.C. Delisle was living the high society life in Las Vegas with her doctor husband, while Hobby and Cecile moved to Arkansas.
Like all of Hobby Derek's marriages, it wasn't meant to last, and within 2 years, Cecile files for divorce and runs back to California, but not before she allegedly shoots him.
And there you go. It's the oddness of this story, of these four people all brought together. Just when you think you've got it all figured out, bam, somebody gets shot. Hobby continued to bounce around from dead-end job to dead-end job, from woman to woman throughout the 1960s and early 70s. He moves in with his former stepdaughter, Delisle, and her son. It's Delisle that introduces Evelyn Williams to her stepfather, Hobby.
There's going to be much more to that story.
I first met Evelyn in 1974. I was working at the Orange County Fairgrounds where I was managing the concession stand at the go-kart track. I was making about $150 a week. I only worked there for about 3 months. Didn't even make enough money to file an income tax return that year. Well, the year before that, or even the year before that. Didn't have no bank accounts. What money I had in my pockets. Didn't own any of my body shop tools anymore. I'd sold them right before I married Evelyn. I met Evelyn in late summer, early fall of 74 at her house. And I'd been living with Delisle, paying room and board. Delisle set me and Evelyn up on a date. Delisle and me and Delisle's son was going out to lunch, and she called Evelyn, told her what we were doing, and invited her along. Evelyn was there at her house with her little grandson. So I asked the little grandson to come along with us, and we all went to lunch. That's how I met Evelyn.
And things started moving along really quickly after that lunch date.
I don't remember the date I asked Evelyn to marry me, but I asked her there in her house in little old den. Married Evelyn about 5 weeks after I met her. Delisle helped with the arrangements. We married first time at Corona Del Mar, but Evelyn wanted a second ceremony for her grandchildren to come to, so we got married a second time at the Balboa Bay Club because Delisle was a member.
She announces that she's going to marry this guy and that the wedding is going to be at the Bay Club in Newport Beach. And of course, my dad refused to go. He would not recognize this wedding. But as it turns out, they'd already gotten married and that the big show at the Bay Club was just what it was, a big show. And of course, she was still Nana to us and he seemed like a nice guy. I mean, he kind of looked perfect for her. They looked like bookends. And when we heard that they sold her house on the water in Lido for $150,000, but that they just gave it away. You know, they just wanted to get her out of town.
Literally overnight, 73-year-old Evelyn reinvented her life and moved from California to Arkansas with her new 65-year-old husband, who was 8 years younger. And as an older, more mature woman, that had to make her smile.
Well, I'd say since Evelyn and me come here last December, I believe, or last January. I don't remember the date. That's one thing I'm no good at, is remembering dates. We all lived with her, me and Delisle and Delisle's little boy, in her house in California for a short time after the wedding, and then moved to Little Rock. We went over on a trip to Hot Springs, and that's where she said she wanted to live, so we started making plans, including buying a property for a skating rink and buying the house.
Oddly, even though Evelyn had only known Derek for a short time before they left California, Evelyn changed her will, amended her trust, and quitclaimed her house, adding Hobby as a joint owner. Delisle knew an attorney, and Evelyn listened to her friend. Of course, California is a community property state, and that might come in real handy if anyone got a divorce. Evelyn was then 74 years old.
I didn't even know she had put her house in her estate in my name till we had moved to Arkansas.
So Hobby Derek and his sixth wife, Evelyn Williams, would settle into their new lives in Arkansas. But they didn't come alone. And of course, disaster was waiting right around the corner.
Big dreams. No one could say that Hobby didn't have big dreams. While Evelyn might have thought she was going to retire and live out the rest of her days relaxing in Hot Springs, she couldn't have been more wrong.
It was a strange time for Hot Springs. See, this resort city was on the decline. The town of 26,000 people promoted itself on the hot spring water that flowed out of the mountain downtown and the thoroughbred racetrack. In the early to mid-1900s, people from all across the nation came to Hot Springs to take those world-renowned baths.
And those waters, hell, they could cure your gout, your syphilis, your polio, and even a hair lip.
Magic waters. Right. By the early 1900s, all of these tourists that flocked to the middle of Arkansas needed some additional entertainment. I mean, you can't go on vacation and just sit around in a bathtub all the time. You gotta get out and you gotta have a little bit of fun.
You mean vices?
Hookers and blow, Steve. I mean, hookers and blow.
Before there was Las Vegas, there was Hot Springs, Arkansas. Gambling landed in the middle of Arkansas, and with gambling came the greedy politicians. For decades, the battle raged on in Hot Springs about the idea of opening gambling.
With each new governor came new unofficial rules. By the time Miss Maybelline rolled into town, gambling had been shut down and the town had started to lose its way. Without gambling, and with folks realizing the magical waters weren't all that magical, the tourism that had kept the town afloat had drastically begun to decline.
But there was still the thoroughbred horse track, and the town continued to celebrate all five seasons: spring, summer, fall, winter, and the Oaklawn racing season.
Local businesses, they catered to that race meet season and all of the visitors the track brought into town. And sometimes those visitors, well, they might have been a little bit more than freaky. Danny Clinton grew up in Hot Springs, and only years later did he realize how different Hot Springs was compared to other hometowns that people grew up in.
Hot Springs being what Hot Springs is, there were a lot of eccentric people around. So it wasn't too surprising, but at the same time, it wasn't just normal.
And Hobby Derrick was no stranger to Hot Springs. While Evelyn might have wanted to retire, Hobby Derrick wanted to make a splash with his third act in life.
By January of 1975, they had arrived in Little Rock and settled on Hot Springs, where Hobby and Evelyn bought 12 undeveloped lots for $83,000 in cash at the entrance to the tourist town to build a skating rink and a go-kart track. The skating rink was built at a cost of $114,000, all funded by Evelyn's money.
Of course, they would also need a place to live, and Evelyn found the perfect house. 18 rooms setting on the lake with expansive views of the mountains. They bought the estate for $153,000 cash from Evelyn's bank account.
A.J. Bond helped build the house back in 1966 for its original owner, and ironically, he became a firefighter. But he remembers that house really well.
I went to work at the fire department in February of 1966, and I had just finished up the last work on the house.
There was even a basement, complete with a kitchen, extra bedrooms, and a den. Soon, Delilah and her son had moved from California to Arkansas to help Hobby and Evelyn Derrick run their skating rink. But if you're starting to think that this might be a recipe for disaster, you would not be wrong.
With almost $500,000 invested in Hot Springs before the skating rink could even open, trouble was brewing. Within a few months of moving, cracks were starting to show. First, Evelyn and Delisle were not getting along, and Delisle and her son were asked to leave the house. They moved across town to a new apartment complex. Hobby later, in court, said that Delisle moved out because she couldn't get along with Evelyn. Want to guess who footed the bill for the swanky new apartment?
Evelyn. Evelyn always paid for everything.
The skating rink was set to open just 11 months after Hobby and Evelyn Williams had married.
Family entertainment makes a long-awaited comeback in Hot Springs with the grand opening of Hobby's Roller Rink. The grand opening celebration starts with the singing of the Star Spangled Banner and an address by the mayor. Mrs. Delisle Compton, business manager, said that for safety and good, clean, healthy fun for children and adults, the rink would charge admission even for spectators.
It's hard to say exactly what all happened, but Evelyn had become disillusioned with the marriage and discovered Hobby had gone through over $500,000 of her money. Within days after the skating rink opened, Evelyn kicked Hobby out and filed for divorce, alleging collusion. Shit had hit the fan.
Delisle said that she was a nurse. Maybe she was. I don't know. But because Nana was so gullible, she believed her. And so Delisle was giving her medication. She was saying it was really vitamins, but it was keeping her pretty sedated.
From the divorce file, we learn Evelyn pulled her money out of her checking account the day before she demanded that Hobby leave the home. The next day, she filed for divorce, and that was the start of a very nasty and bitter divorce. Hobby maintained control of the skating rink during the 7 contentious months as the divorce played out in court. The War of the Roses had nothing on these two. Hobby Derrick quickly countersued for half of the marital assets, including the trust, contending, since they were married in California, it was community property, even though they had not been married for a full calendar year.
Then, just days before what would have been their one-year anniversary, Evelyn files an amendment to the complaint alleging collusion between Hobby and Delisle Compton.
Everything in the press appears to be perfectly normal with the roller rink.
Hobby Derrick, owner of Hobby's Roller Rink, has plans for building a trampoline area, a miniature golf course, a go-kart track, and a batter-up on the acres surrounding the rink. Delisle Compton, the business manager, says skating is one of the greatest things in the world for physical fitness.
There's no mention in the newspapers of the woman who funded the construction, and as you know, the court system runs real slow. But goodness, the rumors started. Today, looking back, those teenage kids from long ago are my age. Hopefully, they're older and wiser. One of the girls who did not want her name used but agreed to an interview had some insight on how the skating rink pulled a profit.
We suspected Hobby was selling drugs out of the skating rink. What an easy place to do it. You get all these kids that don't know their head from their butt, and no one is suspicious of kids running around the place. Because it's a skating rink. That's what we thought. Money was changed hands to shut that up.
You know, I remember back then that there was some talk of illegal things going on, and nothing would surprise me today. Angie Sheets was just a 16-year-old kid at the skating rink, and even she realized there was something off.
I only saw denial. She always made me feel very uncomfortable. She would be in the front desk, and I don't remember seeing Hobby a lot. So she left an impression on me. It was just eerie. It just didn't feel right. So I never saw Miss William during that time.
Hot Springs always did draw in the grifters, and the legal community sure did reap those rewards. The divorce rocks on with attorneys and depositions. Some of those depositions survive today and give us a good look inside the disastrous marriage of Hobby and Evelyn. But no one, absolutely no one, could dream of what was revealed in the courtroom drama that unfolded during the divorce trial.
What you don't know is after her mother, Cecile, divorced Hobby, Delisle married him. Delisle married her stepfather.
Yeah. When I heard all this, my first thought was, of course, she's his daughter wife and they live in Arkansas. Perfect. But there's a reason.
I married Delisle Compton for one sole purpose. That was to save her son, the little boy that I love. And that's the only reason I married Delisle Compton. Never lived with Delisle as man and wife at all. Never slept with Delisle one night in my life.
I spoke with Delisle's son, who declined to be recorded, but did explain that Delisle had gone through a divorce when she split with his father, the doctor in Las Vegas. The doctor remarried and died shortly afterwards. His widow at the time was the executor of his will. Delisle had her young son to consider, and being a single mother in the 60s and 70s, was frowned upon back then. It appears they married to show the court system a stable environment was being provided for her son. A little bit of an ick factor there, but it does make sense. Women at that time period really had no rights to their own kids. The divorce trial was scheduled at the end of May 1976. Evelyn needed support, and at her request, California attorney Joe Lewis approached wig maker Danny King to go to Arkansas to help her through the trial since he knew Delisle. Danny was Evelyn's friend. It was a temporary assignment for a friend, and he'd be making $5,000 for his troubles. That'd be about like $20,000 in today's money.
$5,000 of Evelyn's money. Why not? Because everyone was taking a piece of her.
In May of 1975, there's a photo in the paper featuring Hobby Derrick giving a donation to the hospital with funds raised from a skate-a-thon. That photo, along with others, are available online in our archive at coronersreport.net.
2 weeks later, the divorce was final and the gig was up. Hobby Derrick received $10,000 and a Cadillac for his trouble, plus all the cash he took that was never recovered.
Evelyn is awarded a divorce from Hobby Derrick on the grounds that Hobby was impotent and the marriage was never consummated, along with grounds of collusion. It was ordered that all property, cash, stocks, and bonds be placed back in her name only. There's simply no telling how much money was actually missing from her accounts. But then again, she had put his name on all of her accounts, giving him permission to do with that money as he wished.
Hobby Derrick was removed from the skating rink bearing his name.
But 75-year-old Evelyn, she isn't left alone. Miss Maybelline would rarely be left alone now. Danny King would see to that. He came to Hot Springs to take care of her, and she would reward him well. She offered to make him general manager of the roller rink and told him he could live downstairs in her home.
I'm Evelyn Williams, and even though an unsuccessful marriage brought me to Hot Springs, I feel that I'm supposed to be here in Hot Springs for a definite purpose. It's almost too much of a coincidence that the very product which changed my life, Maybelline, should have a major manufacturing plant only 60 miles away. Too often in a small city, there is a lack of wholesome activity for young people. So they begin to look around for excitement, and that sometimes leads to trouble. Or they may simply leave town at an early age. I've been captivated by the raw, natural beauty of Hot Springs and the warmth and friendliness of the people. I see tremendous potential for Hot Springs to become one of the greatest tourist areas in the entire United States, and I'd like to help that happen.
Danny took his position as Evelyn's protector seriously. As the divorce came to a close, Danny wrote a note to the judge in Evelyn's divorce case.
Even though the divorce was final, a citation was filed against Hobby Derrick. He's ordered to appear and show cause as to why he shouldn't be punished for contempt of court for failing to comply with a divorce decree. He had failed to return the following items: a hot dog cooker, 15 pairs of roller skates, a GMC pickup truck, 2 Lazy Boy lounge chairs, game implements, and 1 small bar refrigerator.
So now we are arguing over a hot dog cooker, a wiener cooker.
And this concludes the first episode in this series. Our team is still actively interviewing witnesses in this case. If you have information you'd like to share, please reach out to us on our website at coronersreport.net. And don't forget, we're a bit different of a podcast. We provide you access on our website to all the files we've gathered, including the police investigation file, photos, documents, court records. This case can still be solved, but we need your help. Feel free to visit the archive and reach out to us. Special thanks goes out to all who made this episode possible, including Evelyn's granddaughter, Sherry Williams, who not only sat for hours of interviews, but also provided us with the voice of her grandmother. We would also like to thank Danny Clinton, AJ Bond, Angie Sheets, and Jim Hawley. Voice actor J.D. Carpenter provided the voice of Hobby Derrick and the reporter. Voice actress Diane Jones provided the voice of Debbie.